Mite Bite, The Secret Life of a Gambling Addict. For more than 12 years, Patrick Foster lived a double life. Turning 31, a popular and sociable young teacher and former professional cricketer, he had a lovely girlfriend and a supportive family, but he was hiding a secret and a debilitating gambling addiction from even those closest to him. He's put it down in a searing new book called Might Bite, The Secret Life of a Gambling Addict. Patrick Foster, delighted to be joining me live on the line. Patrick, good morning to you.
Morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. In the scale of addictions, shall we say, if there is such a thing, do you think people take gambling addiction seriously enough?
I don't think they take it seriously enough. I think they probably take it more seriously than they used to. I think there's a lot more awareness and understanding now than there once was. That said, I still think it's heavily stigmatized. I still think gambling, although it's ingrained in culture and society, is often still a bit of a dirty word. And one of the motivations for writing the book was I found it really difficult to come to grips with the fact that so often people's reaction was almost like, it's gambling, you're an idiot, why didn't you just stop? And there was a real lack of kind of understanding that this is a very serious, or it can be a very serious addiction, just like other addictive substances and behaviours.
So how did you, I mean, when you're talking to people who have drug and alcohol addictions, it's always like, oh, well, I had sherry at my grandmother's for New Year's Eve in 1978 and it kicked off from there. I suppose because you are a professional sports person, you were playing cricket, so you are surrounded by the odds, I suppose, on professional sport, and also those long periods of doing, because people think it's an action packed life, but there are long periods of sitting around doing very little indeed, either in training or traveling or whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely that, and I think sort of for me it started. I'd never gambled before, and my first bet was a winning bet, and I think that probably had a significant impact, although I probably didn't realize it or certainly underestimated it at the time, especially as somebody who's inherently very competitive. It's almost like a drug for competitive people because it's all about winning and losing, and it gave me that on tap. And it very definitely played different parts in my life, but one was almost certainly a kind of boredom killer, so to speak. I'm somebody who's not particularly good with kind of spare time and when I'm doing nothing. And the accessibility of online gambling meant this was something I could do anytime, any place, 24 hours a day. And at times where I wasn't doing something that I should be, in inverted commas, often I filled that time with gambling. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. And I think certainly in a kind of professional sport environment, particularly something like cricket, where, as you said, there is a lot of time doing nothing, that was definitely one of the reasons why it was gambling for me.
And here's the thing. If people have an idea of if you are hooked on drugs, they think you are sitting in a basement somewhere shooting up, but you can be a high-functioning, executive who's got a problem with stimulants, to put it mildly. If you're an alcoholic, people think that you are, on a street corner with a brown paper bag drinking meths. But the reality is, again, you can be a functioning alcoholic and holding down a job, but just topping up through the day. With a gambling addiction, of course, perhaps the physical symptoms aren't as ready. People won't say, oh, you've overdone it on the gambling. And yet, you don't have to be running down to a betting shop or a tote. Of course, with the wonders of smartphones, you can be placing bets on through your device.
Yeah, it's a brilliant point you make. And again, one of the motivations for sharing my story so publicly was I wanted to change this kind of perception or stereotype that surrounds addiction so often, that it is always this type of person or this is what addiction looks like. And actually, I know from the amount of people I've met that have been impacted by it, there is no type really. But so often it is actually people that can continue to be very high functioning. And on the outside, it looks like their world is perfect and they've got everything they want. But underneath it all, actually, it looks very different. These are often called hidden or invisible addictions for very good reason, because I think it is more difficult to spot signs in people, because they might not act, smell, look differently to what they do or did before they were doing it. And it was very definitely the case with me, and that's why I call it a secret gambling addiction, because whilst people knew at times I was struggling, they could never really put their finger on what it was, or they certainly never knew the extent to which it was going on and how much I was struggling.
So presumably, and talk me through this one, is it, because people say, well, it's silly being addicted to gambling, because you know they can maybe understand why you get addicted to drugs and maybe alcohol, but presumably it's the rush. Is it the excitement? It's not just as alcohol isn't about the taste of the booze, presumably gambling isn't about the amount of money you win. It's the anticipation, the excitement, and the heady rush of dopamine or endorphins or whatever when your bet comes in.
Exactly that. I call it my drug of choice, because it did feel like a drug to me, and dopamine is a very powerful drug. And particularly post my big win in 2010, it really changed my relationship with gambling, because now if I didn't win the amount of money that I did then, it didn't give me the same rush, buzz, hit feeling. And I was trying to replicate that every time I did it. By increasing my stakes and betting more regularly. And so that's where it did just become a bit like a drug for me. But I think because it's not something you put in your body, people don't relate in the same way that they do to the things like drugs and alcohol.
So what was the big win in 2010 then, which if you like, set off?
Yeah, so I won the best part of £35,000 one night on a football accumulator. And at that point in my life, gambling just flipped on its head. Because as I say, then if I didn't win that amount of money, it didn't do the same thing for me. I think the fact that I never told a single person in the world that happens again, looking back, shows that there was definitely a problem, because that wouldn't have necessarily been a rational reaction for most people. But for me, it then was like, well, actually now this is money that I can gamble with, or I can make huge amounts of money. And obviously it went in a very different direction.
One of the things with an addiction is the fact that it is that Jekyll and Hyde situation, isn't it? There is the rational functioning person who everybody knows and loves and the whole thing. And yet there is this flip side, which is your addiction, but at the same time you're confident that you're doing this thing, but you can't work out for yourself, you know, the sensible burn would go, okay, I've won £10,000 here or €10,000, I will reinvest this in something tangible. But the monkey in your back who's banging away will go, okay, we're going to flip that, make it twice as big, and then we'll have even more winnings and everybody will love me for it. And you cannot get your mind to function properly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. And it's really difficult to explain that to somebody who's not an addict or has never suffered or been around addiction, but that's exactly it. And there were so many times that I knew in my head what I was doing was wrong. It was against my morals, my values, my principles. I didn't want to do it, to be honest, in many instances, but yeah, I couldn't stop myself. I always say to people the amount of times I was sat sometimes in somewhere like my car, having just lost every bit of money I had, head on my steering wheel, sort of in tears, thinking, right, you've got to stop this. And then almost before I knew it, my phone would be out of my pocket and I would have had another bet. It's terrifying, the grip and the hold that your addiction has on you.
And it's not just on you, because you tend to think about it selfishly. This is if you had my problems, this is what you do. But you don't realize when you're in addiction that you're absolutely causing chaos and heartache and confusion to those around you, your family, your friends, your workmates. But you're too caught up in it to look beyond your screen or whatever your addiction is.
Yeah, it makes you so selfish, and you don't think, you never think about the impact that it has on other people. And the best bit about being in recovery is actually the relationships that I've got back, and that side of things. I think the impact that my behavior had on so many people, I didn't realize until I stopped. And again, in the book, I write quite candidly about the fact that, to be honest, the impact that addiction, so often the focus is on the individual, but often the impact that it has on affected others is even greater, because there's nothing they can do half the time. And people often say, what could other people have done? And of course, people could have done more, but actually it has to come from the person who's doing it. And the only person that can make someone stop really is themselves. And so often if you're around addiction and you're desperate for somebody to stop or get the help, it has to come from them. And that's what's really hard about it.
And of course, in the professional sports arena that you were at some point, you know, at one point, we've got betting companies. I mean, you watch TV, you watch a sports, a sports report, you watch a live thing on TV, and they'll say, this is the accumulator. This is what the odds are at half time. And then you see certain well-known Eastern actors going, who's going to score the next goal. And it's so insidious and so, sexy. And I understand why, because they're trying to make a business. And in the same way that having a beer commercial, it looks great as well, as they're pouring a pint and everybody's having a lovely time watching the game on the thing. But for those of us who have these problems, we look at that and go, no, I can't do that. Absolutely not. Because we know which way it's going to go.
Yeah. And we're often the forgotten ones in that. But I think also, I mean, it's very hard for people to believe, but I'm not anti-gambling in the sense that I recognize that there are a lot of people that do it and don't necessarily have a problem like I did. Just like, if you're an alcoholic, there's people that drink and don't have the same issues that you do. So it would be like an alcoholic trying to shut down every pub. That said, what I do think when it comes to the world of gambling is that we've reached a point where there's very little balance. It's just so saturated in terms of advertising, sponsorship. Some of the messaging, as you say, is actually fundamentally not right, and some of the advertising can be quite predatory in its nature, and that's what I've got a problem with. And we just need to find a lot more of a balance, particularly when it comes to young people and the exposure that they're getting and how it's kind of often shaped and sort of portrayed to them is actually very different to reality, let's be honest.
Talking about sort of how it's portrayed and whatever, one of the things that, most of the audience know that I'm a recovering alcoholic, so therefore I used to be crafty. I had a period when I was drinking, trying not to tell anybody, and I thought I was getting away with it. And in the book, you talk about setting mock exams in school so that you can watch on your smartphone. I mean, it's insanity, isn't it?
Yeah, and nothing would get in the way of me having a bet or my addiction. Everything else that was fundamentally hugely important just went out the window, because the most important thing to me was to be able to have a bet or be wrapped up in gambling one way or another. And it is insanity. That's exactly what it is.
So what was the rock bottom? What was the bit that made you think, I can't do this anymore? And how did you rewire your brain? Because this is what you basically have to do.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, my rock bottom, it's different for different people and it means different things. But I'd reached the point where I really didn't want to be here anymore. And I was on the verge of doing the unthinkable, and ending my life. And the reason that was the case was because at that point, it seemed like the consequences had become so great that they were irreparable, both the financial damage, but the fact that I was almost inevitably going to lose my house and my job meant that I didn't see a way out. And at that point, it had become a matter of life and death for me, because it was either, well, you're not going to be here at all, or you've got to find a way of stopping. And at that point, I reached out for help. And at that point, I got the help that I was so desperate for. I had no idea what that would look like or how it might pan out. But it was at that point that I kind of surrendered control. I went into what is often referred to as rehab, where I was in a very protected environment with other people who were going through similar things to me. And people say the opposite of addiction is connection, for very good reason. And that was definitely a big part of it. But often people say to me, well, what did you do? I essentially spent 3 months learning about myself, unpicking the reasons why. It's not just about stopping, it's about working out why, and understanding your addiction on that level. And that was the key for me. And I'd kind of got that self-awareness back, or learnt it, and I could move forward knowing that I was somebody who just couldn't engage with this behavior or activity, and my word, I'm better for it.
And the other thing, of course, is when you do reach out and there is help available, is realizing that you're not it's not just you, you're not unique. There are people all over on a scale that perhaps you didn't realize, and the relief that comes from that.
Oh, it's incredible. It's so powerful. You do think you're the only one, because you only focus on the people that can do it and not have a problem with it, or aren't alcoholics or aren't gambling addicts. But then when you realize that you're not the only person, and there are other people that have done the things that you've done, that have been wrapped up in the madness that you have, it's like the weight of the world just drops off your shoulders, and you think, well, it's not just me. And whilst that doesn't mean that the problem's solved or that's it, it's the start of a lot of hard work, but at that point you can move forward.
And of course, the thing is you've got to be able to, as you said, you don't rush around, you know, setting light to bookies offices around the country, then the breadth of the country. You've got to be able to function in the, you know, in the world. It's like, you know, people say, well, don't you drink? I said, no, I don't skydive either. And I don't, you know, I don't wrestle alligators. It's just the things that I don't do. So I don't do that anymore. How did you find your first sort of couple of months back in the real world, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't easy. And I was one of those people that wanted a quick fix. I wanted to walk out of treatment and be cured, in inverted commas. One of the biggest obstacles for me, or hurdles to get over, was the fact that this is something that I will and do deal with every day for the rest of my life, but I'm at peace with that now. And it certainly gets easier. I don't have to deal with quite the same urges and temptations. I've found things, nothing will ever directly replace gambling, but I've found things that play an important part in my life that deal with some of the emotions and feelings that I would have historically just run away and dealt with by gambling. I have to be pretty careful about my relationship with some other addictive substances and behaviors, because there's always a danger that you stop doing one thing and you just replace it with something else. But it certainly gets easier. And you can never get complacent or think you're done or you're sorted or, this is never going to be a problem again.
As the saying goes, it's like legs. If you lose one, you can't grow it back.
Exactly. I also realize how much better life I have now, how much better my life is for it. And fundamentally, whilst I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemy, one of the few positives that I can take from everything that happened is I am a much better person.
So the book, because, you know, the story in itself is incredible. It's just great to be speaking with you. But to put it down in a book, and to make that book, I mean, there are legion of alcohol, drug stories, horror stories like that. But I don't think I've come across a book like this that deals with the gambling situation from your point of view. So what made you want to put this down and put yourself out there, Patrick? Because, you know, you cannot fail to do that if it's going to change a life there.
Yeah, and I think there were three main motivations for writing the book. One was the fact that actually it was partly selfishly a lockdown coping mechanism. I wrote it during lockdown because I realized that was going to be fundamentally a very difficult.
Just quickly, how long had you been, if you like, you know, gambling sober for the first term before lockdown? Because that must have been an absolute killer for you. That just occurred to me.
Yeah, it was about two years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I realized that at that point I was going to be very vulnerable. So it gave me a real sense of purpose. something to do during that time. I think the second reason was I genuinely had a motivation to try and help other people. And I always say, if it helps one person, whether it's an addict or somebody that's affected by it, then it's worth me doing. And that's why I do the job that I do now. Because I did want to give back after taking a lot away. And if it helps one person, then great. And the third reason was actually, whilst I had been very open about what I'd been through and my story, so to speak, and some of the things that I'd done, the only way I could put everything down was by writing it. There were things that I've written in the book that I probably wouldn't have been able to talk to people about or admit out loud. I can now because I wrote it down. The book looked very different to what it was when it was published. It was very, very raw when I first wrote it. And fortunately, my co-author, Will, who's a great friend of mine, he managed to shape it into something that is probably readable, which it probably wasn't in its initial form.
And why Might Bite? Why the title?
Might Bite was not actually the last bet I placed, because ironically I placed a bet after it because I had a free bet in my account, which well, that's another point of discussion and story, but I placed a £58,000 bet on a horse called Might Bite in the Cheltenham Festival in 2018. And that was my rock bottom, because I'd said to myself at that point, if that horse had won, I would have won the money back and all the problems would have been solved. I know that's not the case now. Or if it lost or didn't win, then I was going to go and do the unthinkable, and it lost. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But it didn't feel like it at the time. So that was the reason for the title. It's a bit of a play on words, because for some people, gambling does bite. And that was one of the easiest bits about writing the book, was the title, actually.
If there's anybody out there who's got any sort of addiction, or in particular gambling, and they're just thinking, oh, it's just a game that I can stop anytime I want to, as long as it's next Tuesday, then what would you say to them?
Yeah, I think with gambling, which is probably the only thing that differs it from other addictions, is the fact that often the thing that has caused it is the thing that you will solve it, think will solve it, because so many people think they can gamble their way out of the problem because they just view it as a financial problem. And they think, do you know what, all I need to do is win the money back and it will get rid of this, that, and the other. Actually, as a gambling addict, no amount of money will ever be enough. And your relationship with gambling means that actually that will never happen or be the case. So I always say to people who are in the height of a gambling addiction that don't believe that gambling will solve the problem, because it will only make it worse. I think it's a bit of a cliche, but I think when it comes to any addiction, the most powerful thing is talking. The only way you can deal with a problem of this kind is by telling somebody and reaching out for help. It doesn't matter who you tell, but people try and deal with it alone, and it's almost impossible. I tried for a very long time, and I think once you tell somebody, once you're accountable for what's going on, it doesn't solve the problem immediately, but what it does is it allows you to move forward, and to so often start that road to recovery and get the help and support that you often desperately want and obviously need. And it's the start of what can be a difficult but also incredible journey.
The book is called Might Bite, The Secret Life of a Gambling Addict. It's by Patrick Foster with Will McPherson. Patrick, if people want to find you online, is there a website, is there social media? Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm online. I'm at Patrick Foster 02 on X. I'm at Patch Foster on Instagram. If people want to reach out to me personally, professionally, I now share my story as a job. I go into schools and organizations and talk to people about addiction and mental health and share my story. My business is called GAM Ed. GAM-ed. There's a website where you can find out a lot more details. And if I can help anybody, either professionally or personally, you can always reach out.
The book is called My Bites, The Secret Life of a Gambling Addict. It's by Patrick Foster. Patrick, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. It's great chatting to you.